That means reading all that he wrote, as well as much that was written about him. It also means, if the subject is living, not merely interviewing him, but getting to know him, as Boswell got to know Johnson, conversing with him, supping with him, even travelling with him. The challenge is, of course, to do so without falling so much under the subject's influence that the reader ceases to believe the disclaimer that the work is a life, not a panegyric. Boswell, who grew to love Johnson, achieved this feat in two ways: by making explicit Johnson's boorish manners and slovenly appearance, but also, as Jorge Luis Borges noted, by making himself a figure of fun, a straight man to Johnson's wit, an overexcitable Scot to Johnson's dry Englishman. My approach has been different. In addition to the help of all those thanked in the acknowledgements, this author has had one noteworthy advantage over his predecessors. I have had access to Henry Kissinger's private papers, not only the papers from his time in government, housed at the Library of Congress, but also the private papers donated to Yale University in 2011, which include more than 100 boxes of personal writings, letters, and diaries, dating back to the 1940s. I have also been able to interview the subject of the work on multiple occasions, and at considerable length. Not only has this book been written with Henry Kissinger's cooperation, it was written at his suggestion. For this reason, I can predict with certainty that hostile reviewers will allege that I have in some way been influenced or induced to paint a falsely flattering picture. This is not the case. Although I was granted access to the Kissinger papers and was given some assistance with the arrangement of interviews with family members and former colleagues, my sole commitment was to make my best efforts to record his life as it actually was on the basis of an informed study of the documentary and other evidence available. This commitment was part of a legal agreement between us drawn up in 2004, which ended with the following clause: while the authority of the work will be enhanced by the extent of the grantor's, i.e. Kissinger's, assistance, it will be enhanced still more by the fact of the author's independence. Thus it is understood and agreed that the author shall have full editorial control over the final manuscript of the work, and the grantor shall have no right to vet, edit, amend, or prevent the publication of the finished manuscript of the work. The sole exception was that, at Dr. Kissinger's request, I would not use quotations from his private papers that contained sensitive personal information. I'm glad to say that he exercised this right on only a handful of occasions, and always in connection with purely personal and indeed intimate familial matters. This book has been just over 10 years in the making. Throughout this long endeavour, I believe I have been true to my resolve to write the life of Henry Kissinger as it actually was, wie es eigentlich gewesen, in Ranke's famous phrase, which is perhaps better translated, as it essentially was. Ranke believed that the historian's vocation was to infer historical truth from documents. Not a dozen documents, the total number cited in one widely read book about Kissinger, but many thousands. I certainly cannot count how many documents I and my research assistant Jason Rocket have looked at in the course of our work. I can count only those that we thought worthy of inclusion in our digital database. The current total of documents is 8,380. A total of 37,645 pages. But these documents are drawn not just from Kissinger's private and public papers. In all, we have drawn material from 111 archives all around the world, ranging from the major presidential libraries to obscure private collections. A full list of those consulted for this volume is provided in the sources. There are, of course, archives that remain closed and documents that remain classified. However, compared with most periods before and since, the 1970s stand out for the abundance of primary sources. This was the age of the Xerox machine and the audio tape recorder. The former made it easy for institutions to make multiple copies of important documents, increasing the probability that one of them would become accessible to a future historian. Nixon's and Kissinger's fondness for the latter, combined with the expansion of freedom of information that followed Watergate, ensured that many conversations that might never have found their way into the historical record are now freely available for all to read. My motivation in casting the widest and deepest possible net in my trawl